You are listening to Fantha Tracks.
Because of the following special program, Wonder Woman and the Incredible Hulk will not be presented this evening.
Time to get all your Star Wars news in a single file. This is Making Tracks. Here are your hosts, Mark Newbold and Mark Mulcaster.
That's not true. That's impossible.
You're listening to Making Tracks. This is episode 187. I'm your co-host, Mark Newbold, and joining me today is a man who's really, really sad because he was last year's recipient of the Polly Platt Award and he's got to give this year's to Kathleen Kennedy. Mark, how are you doing?
Devastated. I don't want to give it up. It looks so good in my downstairs toilet.
How are you doing, dude? How's things?
I'm fine. It feels like ages since we've spoken, because it is ages since we've spoken.
It has been a while, hasn't it?
Yeah. We've both been very busy with different things. Me with doing stuff in Norway and Finster, and you getting conquered last weekend and feeling under the weather.
Yes, yeah, that was, the downside of spending a weekend at London Film Comic Con, unfortunately. It happens. But, I mean, it was a good event, so I can't really complain. But what about you? I mean, you've been out in the frozen tundras of Hoth. How was that, dude?
It was a bit good. So myself, Matt Booker, Brian Cameron and Paul McHugh all hopped on our respective planes from Gatwick and Aberdeen, flew to Bergen in Norway, spent a couple of days there, did a little fjord tour, and then we travelled on the train all the way to Finster, which is about 2.5 hours on the train, and had a lovely weekend there doing Hoth Strikes Back. So we were doing panels, and there was guests there who were there on the original production. There was Harald Lystad, who was the CEO of Fox Norway. There was Christian Berum, who was a production assistant, and Martin Gant, a special effects technician.
And it looked like there was a decent crowd as well.
There was. I mean, considering how far it is out there, it's a good journey from Oslo. It's about 3.5 hours on the train. From Bergen, it's a little bit less, probably 2.5. But there was folks there from the States and people across Europe, obviously from France and us from the UK, England and Scotland. I don't know the actual headcount. It might be less or might be more. I don't know. But to my eyes, it felt like there was probably 70, 80 people there. It felt like a good amount of people to travel that distance to do an event like that. And I say the hotel was lovely and they really got into the spirit of it.
Around the world, there's these little hotels, either they've been used in the film, the crew stayed there, and they all tend to do something. There's normally a little nod, be it like the room is renamed or something. Kind of go, that's really cool. Because it's not like knocking you over the head. I'm sure if you wanted to go and stay in one of these hotels, you kind of have to request it, and I'm sure you pay a little bit extra for the privilege, but it's not like they kind of do that. And I think it's really nice. I mean, it would be lovely to just kind of go to like a hotel like that and discover without realizing it. That'd be awesome.
It was awesome in the sense that they'd got all the rooms that were there, obviously, were still mostly in the same places. Some rooms had changed. There were some wall spaces where doors used to be and smaller rooms used to be. So they actually put the names of who stayed in the rooms up on the doors. Oh, right. So we were on the same floor as like Hamill and Kirshner and all those guys.
Nice.
Our room was a four berth. So there was four crew guys. We didn't recognize any of the names. Although I'm sure if you actually look through the manifest of who was in the rooms, we'd go, that Mr. Gibson or that Mr. whatever. Yeah, so it would make sense then. We didn't really clock it, but like Peter Sizitsky, the DP, was a couple of doors down, and Kirshner, Hamill, Watts and all those guys, Peter McDonald, they were all right there on our floor. So it was very cool. And they're doing it again in 5 years' time for the 50th.
Get saving, Fanfers. Let's go out there in force. Did you fulfill my request? Did you bring me back a load of snow and ice from Hoth for my collection?
Well, there's good news and there's bad news.
Ah, okay.
I brought back snow, but it's now water. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I did my best. There is a bottle with liquid in it. I'm personally quite confident it's snow, but it wasn't in my line of sight at all times. So, you have to put a bit of litmus paper in just to make sure that it is as pure as the driven, but hopefully it is.
Fingers crossed.
We've got loads of news to talk about. Should we pile into the news?
Let's pile into it. Yeah, like a snowplow.
Like a snowplow, indeed. So, The Mandalorian and Grogu, it's filming in California, pretty much exclusively in California. And California as a state have decided to give them a ridiculously healthy tax incentive, $21,755,000. There's an estimated crew of 500 crew members, 54 cast members, 3,500 background players, filming for 92 days starting in June this year. And the company that they're filming under is Huckleberry Industries US Limited. So lots of news there, lots to think about. we are getting a new Star Wars film and it starts filming in June. We're in March already, so it's not that far away. They have all of the details of the constituent parts of what's required and who's going to be there and what's happening and so on and so forth. But speaking as two Englishmen who've been very fortunate most of our lives to have had Star Wars filming in our country all through the saga and Rogue One and Solo, the US, California specifically, is now getting a Star Wars film being made on their soil. What do you make of that?
It sounds like it's a big old undertaking. Like you said, 3,500 background players, 92 days of shooting. That's about right. You know, 120 might be considered like slightly long. So this is a decent amount of time. You wonder how much of this is going to be shot in front of a volume. This could be just down to like a logistics thing from what's available over here, what space is available in Pinewood, what other things are being shot, maybe simultaneously or prepping at Pinewood, wherefore they don't have space. But also, it could just be down to the director's privilege. John Favreau might just decide that he just wants to shoot in the US.
It just strikes me that with ballooning budgets and films, a lot of high-profile films, not doing as well as you'd imagine that they would, and think that Disney as a company, not just looking at Lucasfilm or not just looking at Marvel, but as a whole, would want to try and get those budgets down. And it does feel like The Mandalorian as a series, as a project, if you like, of all of the sort of separate splinter elements of Star Wars, let alone Disney, just Star Wars, feels like the one that they can control. They could probably, as you said, put a lot of it in front of a volume, which is a technology that's only getting better and getting smarter as we move on. And in that sense, try and reduce the budget. The creator, that's a film that had tremendous success in technical terms, in creative terms, in bringing a monster-looking film that for anybody else would have cost $300 million without a blink in for $80 million. So it proves, and those films prove, it can be done. Gareth Edwards is apparently doing the next Jurassic film and has been brought in at a fairly late point, but the script is way further ahead than people realised. And now he's the man that's going to move it forward. And exciting, because we know Gareth's great with monsters. He's done Godzilla. He did Monsters. He's now doing the other great monster in Jurassic.
Well, Gullet, the greatest Star Wars monster there ever has been.
My goodness. What an observation. Yeah. Wow. You're not wrong. But you know what I mean? There's people like that, people of that quality of director that can not only get great performances from their actors, but they're involved and invested in the visual effects, and they're striving, like Favreau was with the volume. You know, they're striving to bring these costs down, to get more bang for your buck, to make Star Wars mega profitable again, certainly at the box office.
Obviously, this year, like, we just had further tax cuts and tax relief announced in the UK budget. I mean, that's meant to maybe help more independent films. However, you do wonder if maybe something like, you know, new Star Wars films not being made in the UK could potentially have pushed that decision. Because let's be honest, there's a lot of studios being built and have just been finished in and around London.
Yeah,
they ain't going to go anywhere. And it seems like it's going to be healthy for productions to be there for some time. You need to be looking at 5 plus 10 years in the future to make sure that these films that haven't even necessarily been greenlit yet have got somewhere to go and make. And when we were at Pinewood in November, there was a lot of kind of talk from people saying that the crews over in the UK are by far, and I don't think I'm being biased, but it's like the best in the world. There's even discussions that Lucasfilm were going to move some of their productions from the US to the UK because of that, especially to do with creature effects and artistic elements to the production. So I think it's going to be cool. I can't wait to see what actually happens to like Mandalorian and Grogu. In your mind, would you be happy if what you got was basically, it felt like just a feature-length episode of The Mandalorian, or are you expecting this to kind of go way above and beyond?
Because we weren't expecting this film, I think we were expecting more seasons and then the wrap-up with the Favengers, as I keep calling it, you know, the big screen movie at the end of it to cap it all off, or this era certainly off.
Yeah.
Maybe it felt like that would be the big splurge, throw it up on the big screen kind of film. But if it threw the baby out with the bathwater, it wouldn't feel like a Mando project. It feels like Mando Season 3 and all the other shows that came with it, like Book of Boba and Ahsoka, are Phase 1. I know we're in this era now. We've got it with the High Republic where they do it in phases. It felt like that's Mando versus Phase 1. And then Mandalorian and Grogu
It feels like part of phase two.
Exactly. Yeah. And I don't know where Skeleton Crew will sit in that, because obviously we're getting that this year at some point. It's a stupid analogy that won't make sense and probably won't even make the edit of this episode. But when the Simpsons movie came out, they'd done great visuals on the show and they'd improved it and techniques had improved. And then the movie came out and the movie looked so good that they knew that on television they couldn't go back to doing it the way they were doing it before. The TV show had to, once the movie came out in 2008, had to look like the movie. And so it forced a change and the quality got better and the techniques got better and yada, yada. And so I think with Star Wars as well, the big screen in a way has got to kind of match what's happening on the small screen, because the small screen is so impressive. If they made The Mandalorian and Grogu the way they made Andor, it wouldn't work.
No.
It's got to still feel like that TV show.
This is partly them scaling it back a little bit on the budgetary sense, kind of keep it under 200 million. And therefore, then, if we're going through some kind of lull in the box office with respect to like blockbusters, be it people are consciously or subconsciously not going to see those films, again, it's maybe a safer, and I don't like using that term, but it could be like, that's why they gave it to Jon Favreau for the first film. Safe pair of hands. Yeah. Knows he can deliver a production on time, under budget or on budget, and deliver the story beats. So maybe it's just that it's a safer gamble than maybe what we've seen in the past with Lucasfilm in the last, say, 10 years.
Hi, this is Dorian Kinji, and you're listening to Fantha Tracks.
So many congratulations to honorary Fantha Tracker Kathleen Kennedy. She's going to receive the Polly Platt Award for producing at the Austin Film Festival this October, 24th to the 27th. Question for you, Mark. On Fantha and elsewhere on social media, other sites, there's a lot of negativity whenever her name is mentioned, whenever she receives an award, and for a career that is pretty much without equal. You can only really honestly name two or three other producers that have got anything close to what she's got in terms of credits. Why do you think Kathleen Kennedy gets the negativity that she gets?
Do you know what it is? I think it's easy. If nothing else, I think it's lazy commentary, and these people maybe just need to take a long hard look and just move the hell on. I'm not saying leave Star Wars. If they want to be Star Wars fans, that's fine, but just accept that no one's going to come in and remake the sequel trilogy. They are what they are these days.
Yeah.
So you just have to accept it and either embrace it or just go, well, they weren't for me, and move on. People, because you can do it behind a keyboard or on your phone, it's very easy to be a smart ass and just kind of write some comments. And so it's sad, because I think, yeah, you know, we should be celebrating. I mean, if it was George, everybody would pretty much, to a man, be celebrating it. But it's Kathleen Kennedy, and you kind of, you know, you go, well, you'd like to think that then they're not all just sexist, misogynistic dinosaurs.
It's the Andy Murray effect. Yeah, there's another analogy for you. When Andy Murray won Wimbledon, he was British, but when he lost, he was Scottish. So, you know, it's a bit like that. So when there's a great bit of Star Wars television, end of season two Mando, and everyone's praising Filoni, and good grief, I praise Filoni. I think he's fantastic. Hats off and credits for everything that him and his team does.
Yeah.
But when there's a comparatively less awesome episode, Kathleen Kennedy gets the blame. And it's exactly what you say. I think it's just lazy, hackish, clickbaity, nothing comments. And it's the same old tropes get rolled out again and again. We say it a lot on the site. We focus on the positives. And if we're not mad keen on stuff, we tend to just not talk about it or just quietly park it. And that's our choice. We're probably more open here on the pod than we are on the site, let's be honest. The site's a new site, so it's a bit different. Because the people that are giving Kathleen Kennedy this award are far outside of the bubble of just focusing on what happens to Lucasfilm. They're looking at her as an influential producer.
Yeah, her body of work.
Yeah. Absolutely. The work she's done over decades now. And I'm pleased that she's getting that award. I hope she gives us a shout out on stage when she picks it up.
I hope she wears her Fantha shirt.
There's no reason why she wouldn't. I'm going to email her and tell her, put your Fantha shirt on.
I'm Brian Herring, BB8 Puppeteer, and you're listening to Fantha Tracks. That'll learn you.
So a couple of weeks ago, we had the announcement trailer. Now we have the launch trailer for Star Wars Battlefront, the Classic Collection. It's out on the 14th of March, and it's coming to Nintendo Switch, PlayStation 5, PlayStation 4, Xbox Series, XJS, Xbox One, and the PC via Steam. So there's loads of places you can play these amazing games from back in the day. I have very fond memories, especially of Battlefront 2, because it came out at the same time as Revenge of the Sith. Played them to bits on my old PS2. Will you be getting these classics when they come out again on the 14th of March?
Hell yes, absolutely. Same as you. You know, we played Battlefront day in, day out. there's probably about five or six games I can count on one hand, which are games that I spent more time playing. GoldenEye, Star Wars Galaxies, Battlefront, Grand Theft Auto, 3, Vice City, and 5. For players of a certain age who are with slightly worse off reflexes, shall we say?
Yes.
I've noticed when I tried to play Fortnite, didn't last very long. Neither did that game, to be fair. It's nice to be able to kind of be nostalgic about stuff. It's like putting on a nice comfy pair of slippers. You kind of know where you're at, you know what you need to do, and yeah, you just kind of enjoy it. I think for a lot of people, as much as the new versions of Battlefront, which EA brought out, were pretty awesome, I don't think they've ever been able to capture the kind of the magic of Battlefront with that story mode and stuff. So
I think it speaks a lot to the fact that Star Wars has been right up there high in people's minds, and certainly for the fandom, consistently now. When Battlefront 2 came out, it was Revenge of the Sith era, so we felt like we were winding it down. And actually, when you look back, it wasn't winding down at all. It kind of went quiet for a little bit, but there was still loads of stuff coming out. And then we were into the Clone Wars era, and it's been nuts ever since. But even when Battlefront 2 came out, it had been nonstop really since Special Edition, Shadows of the Empire. You know, it's been consistently there. So it feels to look back and be celebrating or calling Battlefront 2 a classic. Of course, it's 20 years old nearly, but it feels weird because we've not stopped since Battlefront. It's been go, go, go. I'll be absolutely all over this when this comes out.
It's always a bit bittersweet, isn't it? We went from a PS2 to the PS3 or 4, and then suddenly it gets to a point where the legacy games aren't supported. You can't play them. I know you have. I have as well. I've got like all my Star Wars games, and it's kind of frustrating because it's like you just wish you could just turn on your latest generation console and be able to just play them.
You should
and
be able then, to.
Like, you know, I'm kind of like, I looked at it the other day. It's like, do I need to go and actually, because I sold my PS2 Slim and my like Nintendo 64. I'm like, do I just bite the bullet? Do I just go and buy them just so I could just, you know, have that what's going to be like, you know, scratch that 2 hour itch. That's all it is, isn't it, really? You know, a couple of hours here and there. But the fact that we can now just download it and play it, that's cool. I'm looking forward to it. Can't wait.
For everything in one location, daily news, reviews, interviews, podcasts, video and social media feeds, bookmark FanthaTracks.com for Star Wars news 24/7, 365.
So last month, myself and Paul Naylor headed down to the South Coast to Beachhead. We had a fantastic time. The reviews up on the site. Whilst we were there, Paul took our trusty Zoom, went out into the crowd and spoke to the guys from Joker Squad. So this is Paul Naylor and the guys from Joker Squad talking all about Beachhead and many other things.
So I'm here today in Bournemouth. We've been this a gaming event at the convention centre. It's a quirky little event, but it's a really good one to come to. And I'm here with Scott Jacobs from Joker Squad. Hi, Scott.
How you doing?
And a market trader. How are you, sir?
It's good. Can I buy that? You sell me, huh?
I might sell you. I might sell you. But first of all,
I take Imperial credits.
I thought you might. So, how did Joker Squad come about? Are you the originator of it? Are you a branch of it? How did it all start?
Yeah, so I'm not. No. So the Joker Squad actually had its 11th birthday yesterday. So it was 11 years old as of yesterday.
Oh, lots of cake.
Lots of cake and, lots of cake and drink. So
lots of immature people, 11 years old.
So actually, the group started 11 years ago in a pub between a couple of guys. We've got one of the founders. We've got Dan, Gary, Paul, Stu.
Yes.
That was it, the four founders. Yeah. So they basically generated from that, and now we're, 130 plus in the group. My role in it in the last 4 years is the has been the event manager, so I put on all the events.
He's Mr. Busy.
Yeah. Mr. Big.
Oh, he keeps us on our toes, eh? So, won't let me sell anything.
So we're trying to find unique events, so not just standard Comic-Con. We try and do what we can, whether it be a hospital visits, to try and sort of try and put something back into the community, or events like we've been today, Bournemouth Beachhead.
So this event, like you say, it isn't automatically what you would think about coming along to as a Star Wars cosplay.
No, no, not at all.
Not at all.
The combination of wargaming, whether it be Star Wars or not, along with the vendors and then cosplays, it's a fantastic blend. Works really, really well together.
Yeah.
He said vendors, but he won't let me sell anything.
Now, obviously, where I've been sat with FanthaTracks, we're very close into geographically in that room through there.
Yeah.
And you've got a lot of people being drawn to. not least of all because of our dear market trainer here, who certainly knows how to get the people to come along.
He's fantastic.
Yeah, they want to buy, I sell, eh?
But yeah, it's interesting that these people probably haven't come thinking there's going to be much Star Wars here,
no.
But they love the little zone that you've got.
Yeah, yeah. Do you know what? The amount of comments we've had in the respect of people not knowing that we were here.
Yeah.
So they expected board games, gamers, they expected vendors, but then all of a sudden they see cosplay. And then obviously Star Wars, big area. We've got like a Tatooine sort of mini town going on, along with our full-size pod racer and yeah. various costumes. Along
which
with...
you won't let me sell.
And a lot so of, yeah, it works well.
Yeah, and a lot of our listeners, if they went along to Celebration in London last year, and yeah. if they went along to Cantina, which yes. is probably one of the best events, I'm a big Ash fan anyway.
Yeah, without a shadow of a doubt.
And a lot of your props were on stage.
They were, yeah. So the whole backdrop of the town was ours. The pod racer, the engines, which made up of the DJ booth, that was ours as well. Yeah. Well basically, everything was there.
Yeah.
Was ours. We're mixed with ourselves, Joke Squad. I think we had guys from UKG, Rebel Legion, and Mando Merc there as well.
Brilliant. So they all
blended big combination. Yeah.
Which fantastic. Is great. It's great that you all come together and do stuff like that.
Well, we all do the same type of thing. We try and have fun in doing the passion that we do and love. Star Wars,
yeah.
also trying to raise money for children's hospices and charities and various charities across
and
the
UK. And that's what it's UK. All about, really.
100%, that's yeah. exactly what Absolutely. It's all about.
Yes, we're doing it for good, not for bad, aren't we, Mr. Market Trainer?
I sell to both sides.
You've got to make a living, you know. So obviously you've done this event. You were talking to me earlier. You've got a very busy calendar coming up.
Yeah, so just up until May, we've probably got about 8 or 10 events plus coming up. We've got multiple ones all over the sort of UK, up to Leicester, Southampton, Bournemouth, various different events.
It's great. We've got a really good team because they like to get out there all over the country. It's not all just done on postcode.
Nope.
Our guys like to travel. Yeah, they get in there, get stuck in.
Yeah, yeah, we're very lucky. To be fair, again, I'm sure it's with other groups, but without members within our teams and Joker Squad, we wouldn't be the group that we are. So it all does fundamentally come down to the members.
I think I remember bumping into you in London at Celebration.
Yeah, we're at Celebration. Yeah, obviously at Cantina. We get everywhere.
Yeah. And have you got members dotted around all over the UK?
Yeah, so we've got guys up in sort of Leicester, Milton Keynes, Weymouth.
Manchester.
Manchester. We've got Kent, Southampton, Portsmouth, Eastleigh, Reading, Swindon, London.
And now you know why he's got no hair.
He's going to cosplay as Lobot, it's obvious.
Exactly, yeah. I'm working my way towards it.
And in terms of the fundraising aspect, is it always the Children's Hospice?
So, yeah, so fundamentally we do raise for Alexander Devine Children's Hospice. That's where the majority of our sort of fundraising goes to, because we like to try and raise as much as we can for that cause. And they're a fantastic, fantastic charity.
Absolutely.
And you know, you find your non-national charities don't get as much fundraising, so we try and do what we can. However, that being said, we we do raise other, you know, raise money for other various charities. We go to other events to help them raise money for their charity. So we're not just exclusive to one. We try
like
and
to
help
think
everyone.
We can support other friends in the Star Wars community.
Exactly. Yeah. So whether it's supporting other sort of costuming groups, we're raising for them, or going to another event to help raise money specifically for them. You know, at the end of the day, as long as we can help someone, then that's what we're happy about. Yeah, then we'll be there.
Yeah, absolutely. And so you've got some ideas about things that you'd like to do in the future? Have you got anything coming up beyond sort of May, or is it, have you got some sort of like glimmers that you can let Fanta Tracks know about that might not be fully formed at this stage?
This guy's got glimmers all the way through.
I mean, we've already got bookings and events all the way through to the end of the year already. You know, we've got some big events coming up. We're putting a lot of time and effort in the minute into Portsmouth Comic Con.
Come on, pay, eh?
Where we've got, we all see a big Star Wars area, which we're putting a lot of time in at the minute, making props and all that good stuff. But, you know, again, we're with some other fantastic guys in Bournemouth, Southampton, Reading. We've got one in Reading in April. New group come up there. We're trying to get everywhere we can, help raise as much money as we can.
And we've got the big one at Rapture Gaming Festival over in the Midway.
Over sort of Kent area as well. So we get everywhere.
DC,
we can.
Meet the Death Star.
So, folks, if you're out there and you're at an event and you see the Joker Squad and you bump into Scott, and certainly if you bump into the Market Trader,
you'll know.
Make sure.
Come on by, hey?
Along. Go along and say hello. Brilliant talking to you guys.
Nice, we'll get you too. Cheers.
Thank you very much.
Cheers.
This is Susanna Malik from Mandalorian and Boba Fett, and this is Fanta Tracks. Is it Fanta Track? I'm blind. I couldn't read it. Fanta.
I'm still going to use that.
Are you? Then use it. You're like, this dumb broad can't speak English.
Later this year, we'll be getting the first season of The Acolyte, and the star of the show, Amanda Stenberg, was talking with Magazine C, and she discussed her own Star Wars fandom and her journey towards being in the show. There's a large quote, but I'm going to read it out because I think it's fascinating. She says, "I was a huge nerd growing up. All I did was read sci-fi and fantasy. So I think there's something about being able to be a part of the Star Wars universe that feels like a strange culmination of the progression of my life, especially like one of my first big jobs having been in the sci-fi world in The Hunger Games." And she goes on to say, "My favourite character in the Star Wars galaxy is Padme because she's just that girl. You know, she's intelligent, articulate, educated, sexy. She's such a leader and a decision maker. And also, I like the fashion." And she finishes off to say, "There are so many lessons that you can learn from the Star Wars galaxy, so many powerful lessons around power, how power corrupts, how we contend with the dark and light parts of ourselves. Star Wars is jam-packed with allegories. And what I love so much about it is you can take one that's the most important to you." So clearly, Amandla is a dedicated Star Wars fan just from wearing that Padme costume at Celebration, told you everything. What do you make of that? We've got this new show coming. We've got a new era starting. It's going to feel fresh. It's going to feel different. And you have somebody who quite clearly knows her poodoo right at the top of it. I personally think that's very exciting. What do you make of what Amandla says there?
Yeah, I think that's really exciting. And I think that's hopefully going to be something that will resonate with the fans as well. I think she kind of came across very well last time at Celebration. And yes, the Padme costume, awesome, 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 awesome. We're going to be celebrating really in a month's time or so, the 25th anniversary of Phantom Menace. Amandla can't actually be more than maybe a couple of years older than that. So she really is a prequels baby.
Literally, yeah.
So based on the fact that her series that she is going to be starring in is just before the prequels, I think that got a nice ring to it as well. I really like the vibe that I'm getting from Amandla. I think she is going to be a positive force for good when it comes to Star Wars fandom and The Acolyte as well. Whether or not she is a good character or not, who knows?
Who knows? It's a great point you made, though, that I think she's 24, 25. So, yeah, you're right. She's bang on that sort of prequel era age. And we're at a point now where older fans, and I include you now when I say older fans, because you came in on the special editions, which is pre-prequel. So, and obviously I was there at the start. But fans who sort of only had the OT and then got other stuff, we watch and enjoy and soak in and take in what we do from modern Star Wars. But if you are of the age, as Amandla is, where the prequels were coming out whilst you're, you know, a child, whilst you're being born, going through, they're the first things that you're going to cotton onto. There's a whole range of Star Wars fans to whom the prequel trilogy is their OT because it's original. It's their original. It's not their mum and dad's Star Wars. It's their Star Wars. And I'm thinking, we mentioned the Skeleton Crew earlier, and there's kids in that who are 9, 10, 11 years old who were to the sequel trilogy what Amandla is to the prequel trilogy, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
So it's those two second trilogies to those people watching them, that's their OT. That's their core Star Wars starting point. I mean, for us, we went back to the prequels, we went forward to the sequels. If you're a sequel kid, you're going back to everything else. If you're a prequel kid, you're looking forward to everything else. So it's just a different perspective on Star Wars, isn't it?
Yeah, different perspective. And I think it's nice that different generations have different Star Wars stories to grow up with. And I think that is one thing that works for these kind of evergreen franchises is being able to kind of change with the times a little bit. And and I know, obviously, with change, as we've kind of discussed with like Kathleen Kennedy, becomes and some kind of resistance to it by certain quarters of the fandom. But then it's like, it's not the same Star Wars that it was. And it's like, you can't expect Mark Newbold, who was, what, 8 when Star Wars came out, to be the same person as Mark Newbold, who's 50-odd, yeah, now. Yeah. You know, it'd be worrying if it was. So therefore, you kind of go, well, why, if you've moved on with your life and you've got different attitudes and experiences, why should these things stay locked where they are? And it's unfortunately, you kind of go back before the advent of VHS and stuff. If you missed a film at the cinema and it was never re-released, you missed that film. You know, it would just be a thing in history. You probably would never see it again unless it came on TV or something. But because of the fact that we have this touchstone with like being able to bring home video and watch films at home, we can constantly kind of watch them. We grow up, these films stay the same. And then obviously it's when something new comes along, a new trilogy, that suddenly feels jarring because it's not quite the same. Whilst we haven't talked about it, that was definitely a symptom of what happened with, I think, the prequels. But if you think about it, if she's 24, 25, it might not even be the prequels. It might be the Clone Wars, which is even cooler.
When the prequels came out, a lot of people enjoyed them, obviously, and they did great business, and they were a smash hit, given the budget compared to the returns. And I think Phantom Menace at one point, I think it was only like Titanic ahead of it, really. I think it was number two for a while. But a lot of people now, because of the Clone Wars and the investment in the Clone Wars and the wonderful offshoots from that, which continues to every Wednesday on Disney Plus with The Bad Batch, you know, you kind of feel like that's a continuation of the Clone Wars. That era is so well thought through, so well filled out. Almost, you could almost look at the prequel trilogy, certainly Clones and Sith, as the bookends, well, they are the bookends to the Clone Wars. And if you're a fan of the era and you're 9, 10-year-old Amandla, you're watching Cartoon Network and there's the Clone Wars and it's on every week and it's Star Wars and you've maybe seen a couple of the prequels and you're just really getting into it. Wow. That's the thing we dreamed of. I'm saying we as our OT kids dreamed of having something like that and then droids. But that's what we had. I know when droids came out, I was 14. I was a lot older. But, you know, it was a weekly Star Wars thing and we were very fortunate to have it. So it's a common thing we come back to on this show about entry points to Star Wars. I just think now with Amandla coming in at that point, I would imagine she's very receptive and she's kicking off a new era entirely, best part of a century before Phantom Menace. It's, you can see it's that slide towards the tipping point. I think it's going to be fascinating, not just her, but her fellow cast members, to see how they talk about it when the junkets start and talk to us fans when they hit conventions.
All righty. So I think for this week anyway, that is all the time we have. We don't have a listener's question lined up this week, unfortunately. However, we are always welcome to receive them. So, Mr. Newbold, can you tell people how they can get in touch with a listener's question or thought or theory?
I certainly can, and here's how you do it. If you want to be part of the action, visit FanthaTrax.com or be sure to comment, like and share on our social media feeds at FanthaTrax. Send in your listeners' questions by emailing radio@FanthaTrax.com. Subscribe, leave a review, preferably a 5-star one, on Amazon Music, Audible, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or your podcatcher or smart speaker of choice. And as always, thanks to James Temple for composing the FanthaTrax intro, Adam O'Brien for our making tracks opening music, and Mark Daniel and Vanessa Marshall for our voiceovers. Tune in to Good Morning Tatooine. It's live Sunday evenings, 9 o'clock UK, 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific, on Facebook, YouTube, and Twitch. And check out our FanthaTrax Radio Friday night rotation every Friday at 7 o'clock UK time for new episodes of The Phantom from Down Under, Planet Layer, Desert Planet Discs, Start Your Engines, Collecting Tracks, Cannon Fodder, and special episodes of Making Tracks. And every Tuesday at 7 o'clock UK time for your weekly episode of Making Tracks. And remember, FanthaTrax.com, our social media feeds, FanthaTrax TV, and FanthaTrax Radio are absolutely free. So no Patreon, Buy Me A Coffee, Kickstarter or Indiegogo required to stay updated on all the latest Star Wars news. And that's me done for this episode.
Epic. Brilliant. Nice one, dude. Well, look, it's been lovely to catch up with you again this week. And hopefully we'll be back next week for another episode of Making Tracks. So until then, everybody stay safe. Take care. Have a wonderful, fantastic Star Wars week, whatever that means to you. And of course, as always, may the Force be with you.
Coming up next on FanthaTrax Radio, it's The Fantha from Down Under.